Hello, everyone. Welcome to this exciting event that we have here today. Some amazing panelists that we're going to get to hear from just shortly. And I get the pleasure of introducing each of them. So let's start now with the Vice President of Hockey Operations for the Professional Women's Hockey League, also known as the PWHL, Annie Kamens. I think we can. Yeah, you can sit. We'll sit down. All right, and next up we have professional mixed martial artist and UFC fighter, Mackenzie Dern. Next up, Hockey Hall of Famer, inductee, and legendary sports writer and columnist for the Los Angeles Times, Helene Elliott. And last but not least, of course, we have CEO and founder of AEG Sports Management, Denise White. All right, welcome, ladies.
Thank you.
We're gonna just jump right into it. We're gonna get going. I know everyone here is very eager to hear all of your backgrounds, your stories, and why you got started in sport. So, Helene, I wanna start with you. I mean, you have had an amazing career, a long career, 47 years as a sports writer, columnist. Helene, why was it sports for you that you wanted to get into?
Well, when I was a kid, I had a great memory for numbers. I used to have all the home run hitters statistics memorized and hockey goal scoring records memorized. And I always liked to write. And it seemed to me, why don't I put the two passions together for sports and for writing? And I remember being told, no, you can't. Women can't be sports writers. And, you know, you have to pick something you can reasonably expect to do. And, you know, at that time, there were almost no female sports writers. And certainly in my early years in the industry, there weren't very many. But I think you have to have a certain degree of stubbornness. And you have to, if it's something that's your passion, go for it.
Annie, how about you?
Well, I got into sports because I did whatever my brothers did. So, you know, at the time there was no girls playing hockey, so they were playing, so I wanted to play. So I think just being around the game and being around the sports and then eventually figuring out and learning what sports brings to you about winning and losing and teamwork and collaboration and all of it, I think it just catapulted me into not only wanting to play in college, and also want to work in it. And, you know, I had the opportunity to work in sports at the age of 25, and I'm still in it. Now, what I thought was my dream job in the NHL is now my dream job in the PWHL. So just exciting to kind of keep moving it forward, especially in the women's space.
Mackenzie, you've had a little bit of a different journey as an actual athlete in this case. How did you get started in your young days, and what sparked your love and passion?
I started because of my dad. He had a gym. He has a gym until today, a jiu-jitsu academy. So just growing up was like lifestyle, you know, the same way you wake up, you learn to brush your teeth, have breakfast, it was go to jiu-jitsu, you know, and it took me a little bit until I understood that all the other kids didn't do jiu-jitsu. I thought that everyone did jiu-jitsu. You know, for me, it was just a lifestyle. I mean, it was easier than having a babysitter. You know, my dad would just take me to the gym, leave me in the corner. I'd be watching him teach class and going to the competitions. And for me, he was like a celebrity, you know? I'm like 4 years old watching my dad compete and fight. And I'm like, man, I want to do that when I get older, you know? And just started getting into it. And I was never really good at numbers or the studying part, you know? I was kind of more the physical part of it, you know? So my dad definitely helped guide that energy that I had and discipline, and just how much martial arts and the sport helps us push our limits, you know, and I think that was the best way to help kind of guide all my energy and put into the, you know, the things that can make a difference.
Denise,
Well, mine was very untraditional. I was a journalist when I first came out of college, and I was working in Los Angeles, and I was actually jobless at the time, and started working with some entertainers on some sets in Los Angeles, and one of the actresses I was working with started talking to an NFL player at the time, and eventually he asked me if I could do for him what I was doing for them, and I was like, well, don't you have an agent? He's like, yeah, but the agent's not really doing much. And so I was like, well, let me try, right? I'm like, okay. And it wasn't really that I had ever focused on working in sports, but what I found when I started working with him and then subsequently another athlete and another athlete and another athlete is representation was missing some spaces, right? And for me, it was about filling those spaces. At the time, it was like 20 some odd years ago, and there wasn't a lot of women in the representation space of having a business that represented all athletes. You have some agencies that represent just NFL players, NHL players, MLB, and so on, UFC. But could there be a space where a woman, especially a woman, could do representation across the board? And so that's how we were born. We were born by literally taking a chance on one player and then me falling in love with the sport at the time, and then another sport and another sport and another sport. And that's where we ended up.
So one of the themes for all four of you is that, you know, you're trailblazers in the sense of there might not have been many women in a role, and now you are an icon for that role in your respective positions. But Helene, for you, when you started out, you talk about how there was no women were allowed in locker rooms at times. Just reliving some of those stories from your early days, how important is it to recognize that history to where, from the journalist side, it has grown to now?
I think that whatever field you get into, you should know some of the history. And about a year or two ago, I was sitting with a male writer for The Athletic, and just happening to notice, we were in the Lakers locker room, I think, and just happened to notice all the female reporters in the room. And I just said to him, I'd like just making conversation, wow, you know, there's so many women here. It's really amazing to see, because, you know, I go back to the days when they didn't let women in the locker rooms. And he turned to me and completely honestly said, there was a time they didn't let female reporters in locker rooms? And you know what? And I was glad that he didn't know that that had been the case, but I was sad that he didn't know some of the history. And I think you can only go forward if you know where you came from, and if you can build on what you came from and the circumstances you were in and the circumstances of the industry. It's not to say, you know, longing for the good old days or anything like that, but it's, you can take lessons from the past and apply them to the present and adapt them for the future.
Denise, for you, you talked about how you were basically one of one.
Yeah.
There were no women representing athletes at the time. How did you get started then in just knowing, okay, I've got a tough road ahead, but what led you to persevere through that?
I mean, I think my grandmother would tell you I'm a tough little girl. I never took no for an answer, which was good and bad, by the way. I think for me, when I finally started getting into the space of representation and realizing that there was no women, so the women out here that, and even men that are looking to work in sports, you have such an advantage for those of us who didn't. I saw nobody that looked like me. There were no females in the business. Getting a chance, except one man, and some of you might know who he is and some of you might not. His name was Tom Condon, and at the time he represented some of the biggest quarterbacks in the NFL. Peyton Manning, Eli Manning, Drew Brees, all those people. And he saw something in me that resonated with him, and it was probably that little spark of fight that he was like, you know what, I'm gonna help you. And he has, even until to this day, he's one of my most treasured mentors and someone that has helped me along the way. But having a female, I wish I would have had the opportunity to have a woman that was like, hey, let me show you the ropes, let me help you along. But I didn't. So I had to fight a little bit harder. I had to work a little bit longer. I had to pay attention, because I always tell people it's not how you get there, but it's how long you stay there. Right? So for me, it was, like I said earlier, it was a little bit untraditional, but, you know, getting there, and once I was there, and I had some of the help of some men in the industry, quite honestly, was really some cherished opportunity.
You bring up a really good point there, mentors, how important that was from the very beginning of all of where you started, Annie, did you have a mentor that helped you along the way?
Yes, I had a lot of mentors, and I'm sure you guys did too. I mean, there's plenty of mentors. You talked about your father. I mean, allowing my parents, first of all, allowing me to play hockey in, you know, the early 80s when girls just didn't play hockey. They played sports, but not hockey at the time. So I think that was a really big, you know, confidence booster for me to know that my parents kind of had my back, my brothers had my back, and I was allowed to play. I think getting into the business when I started working for the LA Kings, when I stopped playing hockey in 1998 and I moved out here and started working for the Kings, I had a boss by the name of Bogey, who Kurtzy knows who Bogey is. He's a great friend and a great mentor to me, and the reason being is because he gave me my opportunity in sports and in the business, and that was the first time I didn't know anything about sports or the business other than playing. So he kind of gave me the opportunity, and he let me lead in a way where he allowed me to make small mistakes. He allowed me to lead and be creative and try new things, and if it didn't work, we kind of, you know, revamped it in year two. So it gave me a lot of confidence in trying things and not just going by the script. And I think that allowed me to, in my, you know, career with the Blackhawks and now with the PWHL, allows me to show that we can build and try new things and not be afraid to grow.
And you never know when you're going to meet someone, because you met your boss roller hockey on the beach.
I sure did. Yeah. So when I moved to Santa Monica, I didn't know anybody, and so the only way to meet people to me was to just go play hockey. So I would rollerblade down to the beach, and we'd turn over the trash cans, and we'd have the orange ball, and we'd play hockey. And at the time, he was there playing hockey, and he was like, "What are you doing here? You know, you want to come help me out?" And I was driving a big truck and filing papers and doing anything I could just to help out. Yeah.
Mackenzie, for you, getting started, having your dad as that role model, was he also a mentor for you in your early days?
Yes, definitely. I mean, like I was saying before, I grew up watching my dad lose weight, running on the beach, working out. You know, we were like best friends. So everything that he was doing, he would kind of bring me along and have me, obviously, at a less not as intense, you know, but basically following along everything he would do, his footsteps. But it was actually pretty funny because that was I started from jiu-jitsu, my jiu-jitsu career, and he was always supporting, always wanted me to compete, and today I'm an MMA fighter, you know, and MMA, there's even less girls doing it than they do jiu-jitsu. So when I made the transition after jiu-jitsu, my dad was like, "No, I don't want to see my daughter get punched in the face, stay in jiu-jitsu, you know, it's just chokes and arm bars." You know, and now I have a daughter, and I understand what my dad probably thinks about. I can't imagine her doing that, you know. But of course, if she's going to do it, I'm going to support her and her dreams and give her the best guidance I can. But then there was Ronda Rousey, and she was a big, big name in the women's MMA, and she was kind of my inspiration in making that transition to MMA, which is where, you know, way more intense, you know, punch in the face and really trying to set new... make, you know, pass the limits and see movies and all these things that being a fighter can present, you know. So I had my dad who really mentored me in being the black belt and the jiu-jitsu champion that I was able to become. And then I had Ronda Rousey who really gave me that inspiration to be like, okay, I can see where I can get to and see where I can try and, you know, push past those limits.
And it's special too because it's been a variety of men and women for all of you, just how you've had mentors, and doesn't matter who they are, but just knowing you have that support system. Mackenzie, you brought up having your daughter. How did that impact your career and just being a mom and being a, you know, a fighter as well?
Yeah, it's like a big circle, you know? Like, my dad was my mentor for me, and I always knew that I wanted to have kids and not be retired. You know, I wanted to have kids while I was still active because I grew up watching my dad be active, you know? So I was like, okay, for me, what worked the best was seeing the role model. And I wasn't very good when they tell you what to do, you know? Don't do this, don't do that. Then I do the opposite, you know? But when I see them doing it, then I wanted to copycat, you know? So I always thought, okay, I think any daughter of mine, which will probably be maybe a little bit similar to me, I wanted to be a role model, even if she doesn't want to be a fighter, but if she wants to be involved in sports, a manager, a doctor. I think sports, it teaches a lot, you know, and sometimes we don't get what we want, you know, we have to work hard, we have ups and downs, but we keep at it, you know, and I think independent of what job you decide, you can take that with you, you know. So I said, I'm going to have a kid, I'm going to have my kids and still be active, you know, and she's seen me win, she's seen me lose, she's seen me and she comes and she kisses me, okay, let's go play, you know, I'm like, okay. She doesn't care, you know, if I'm winning or losing, and that really keeps you like a reality check, you know, and makes you just keep staying focused, and she's my biggest motivation for sure.
I think what Mackenzie said is so prevalent here is that her daughter now has role models, right? You see women in spaces, these spaces that we might have never been in before, and I think one of the things I wanted to hit home today was that there's so many opportunities for women in the space. Like when we were talking earlier, when we grew up, a woman in sports, you only thought, well, a woman in sports was a woman that played sports. But now you can be a GM of a team, you can be a publicist, you can be a marketing manager, you can be an agent, you can be a head of an organization, you can be player personnel, you can have your own agency. There's all of that is sitting up here. And so it's just really what you want to do. And when you find that focus on what you want to do, find those people that can mentor you, find those people that can give you the tools or just the knowledge and the information on how to go about it, whether it's going to school or doing an internship at a club or whatever it may be, or going and following a journalist around if you want to be a writer or whatever that, or a VP of a team. There's so many opportunities now that we're just, you know, I would have never in a million years, 25 years ago, thought I'd be sitting on a stage today with a room full of people wanting to know about women in sports. And it's just, we've just come a really long way.
And it's also an important time, I think, for women in sports, as we see with the introduction of Annie's of the of the Women's Hockey League. I mean, there's also the Women's Professional Soccer League. There's just so many opportunities opening up things. Look at the media rights fees that are being paid for the women's NCAA basketball tournament. There's an audience out there. There's people who want to watch it. And if it's made available, there will be an audience. You know, people ask me about the job and how it's evolved over the years. And, you know, people sitting here in the audience, if you decide to get involved in sports in whatever way, there may be jobs, you may have a job 5 years from now that doesn't exist right now. That's how fast the technology changes. That's how fast the opportunities are growing. You know, 5 years ago, there wasn't a stable women's professional hockey league. You know, 10, 15 years ago, there really wasn't a stable women's soccer league. The WNBA has been there for a long time, admittedly supported by the NBA in part, but it's a conversation piece now. I mean, and I think that the WNBA is getting a jump, too, from the popularity of women's college basketball right now. But the thing is, keep your mind open, keep your imaginations open. You could be using tools to tell stories. I think there's always a need to tell a story. It's a human instinct almost to tell a story, to hear a story. There may be ways to tell the story that 5 years from now that we don't have now. TikTok, anybody hear of TikTok 5 years ago or 7 years ago? I mean, and now, you know, how many people use it and how valuable a tool it is, but keep your minds open, keep your imaginations open. You may end up doing something that you never thought you'd do because the opportunities are getting greater day by day for women in so many different areas of sports.
Helene, I remember you shared with us prior to this, it's a social movement for women's sports. Just speaking to that, how have you seen the coverage of women's sports evolve even more, too?
Yeah, I mean, it's not just a league, it's a social movement, really. It truly is. I mean, society is changing. I mean, it used to be that if you were a fan of women's sports, there was like, oh, really? Like, you must have played, you know? You must have worn those little skirts and played field hockey, and, you know, after college, that's the end of it. But now there are so many opportunities out there. It's important. There's a responsibility, too. If you're going out there into the world to be a vice president of a hockey league or a team executive, to be a fighter, to be an example for your daughter and all these other little girls, it's, you know, I think it's important to keep in mind that something, and we talked about this before too, Billie Jean King's famous saying of see it and be it. If there's somebody out there doing it, it may hit your imagination, wow, I never knew a woman could do that. And there are more and more of those opportunities now, and I think it's almost a responsibility to keep this movement going, keep it going forward. I don't know what form it'll take. I don't know who will lead it, but I do know it's going to move forward.
And just to add on that too, I mentioned it a little bit yesterday on the panel, but that women's sports isn't any longer perceived as like a charity, you know, something good to do. It's now a smart investment, a smart return on investment. You see our commercial partners, and our branding and marketing, everything that catapults women's sports forward. It's not only about Billie Jean King said it best, if you can see it, you can be it. But also looking at the sponsorship dollars and the ticketing revenue that comes out of investing in women's sports. In the PWHL, for example, we have a lot of unbelievable, incredible sponsors in Barbie Canada, Canadian Tire, Elf Cosmetics, Woody Creek Distillers. I don't know if a lot of you watch the walk-ins on social media for the PW, but the players walk in and they have, you know, they can have their own personality and their own style. So not only on the ice or on the field or on the court, it's what these players are looking like and who's following them off the ice. I mean, Alex Morgan is a great example to my daughter who, you know, she follows off the ice and her style. And so just putting that into perspective as well, when you're talking to corporate partners, that it is a smart investment. It's not just, oh, women's sports, it's so fun, like, yay, they play too. So it's this whole like social movement and mind shift of like what, how it, you know, goes back into the ROI and on the business side.
Annie, on the business side for the PWHL, since the puck dropped on January 1, what have been some of the things that have been challenges for the league and just, I mean, all that's ahead for the league and what you do on a daily basis with your team?
Yeah, I know we were talking the other day about this, like what do we do? Well, we do everything. Our VP of brand is here, Conan, as well, and we were just talking earlier, like we can't wait for year two and three where we can actually like strategize and focus and do things. Right now it's just like putting out fires and trying to figure out what's best for our players. We dropped the puck January 1st of this year. We announced the league in August, so in 125 days, so like 4 months, we built a league from nothing, from scratch. So, you know, huge credit to Billie Jean King and her partner, Alana Claus, and our ownership group, Mark and Kimber Walter, who come with a pedigree of sports and capital and revenue. They own the LA Dodgers, among some other sports leagues. So we had the backing, we had the capital, we had the support. We have a great business and hockey operations team. Jaina Hefford, who is my boss, who's a 5-time Canadian Olympic medalist, you know, she put a great team together and she just said, we just have to do this and we have to do this really quickly. So the biggest challenge is always time. We didn't have a lot of time, so getting things done in a really quick manner, but knowing that we were supported by a great team, great individuals. We have our general managers and each of our 6 clubs that just were put aside their general manager duties to like help us order printers and paper and skate sharpeners. And so there was so much that went into just building from the ground up that you don't realize until you're in it. And what was really impactful and important is making sure that the players knew that this was their league. They built this league. They wrote the collective bargaining agreement before the league even launched. So, you know, player safety and player innovation and all of that came first. So there was a lot that we needed to do in the front office, on the executive side, to make sure that we build this league for the players, and that on January 1 or even before that, when they walked into training camp on November 15th, that they were proud and they were happy. And again, you only get one opportunity to make them happy and make them proud. So making sure that we hit all the deadlines we could so they knew that this was real and that we had their backs, and again, on or off the ice, that we were going to represent them and they were going to represent us to the best of their ability.
For you, Mackenzie, you have an entire team of people behind you on the day-to-day for business and all of the nutritionists, social media, all of that. You know, Annie kind of touching on a little bit of all the different roles that everyone plays in building something, but for you, behind the scenes, what does that look like in the different kinds of roles? If someone wants to work with an athlete, what can they look into getting into?
I mean, well, the first part is that it wouldn't be possible without ladies like these ladies next to me. You know, it's kind of hard to tell a story in the background of a woman unless you're a woman or you're a father, you know, or you have a sister or someone involved to really be able to tell. I'm talking on an athlete's standpoint, you know. Otherwise, when I'm fighting or we're fighting, all they talk about is how we look, you know what I mean? So it's like really the work that goes behind it in social media and public relations and nutrition is to have us have our best performance possible, represent our teams, represent our managers, represent our sponsors, bring our level of how much we can ask for fighting purses, for all these things, you know, sponsors. It wouldn't be just with me doing it, it's not possible. You know, I need women like, you know, these ladies that help support you and see the vision that we're trying to get to, you know, for people to actually take you serious for what you're doing, all the hard work that goes in, for being a mom, for being a daughter, you know. And it's funny, I'll be like at a competition and my dad will be next to me and one guy will be like, man, she looks really good. And then looks at my dad's looking at him like, what are you going to say about my daughter? You know, and he's like, oh no, her technique is really good. You know, I like it. And that's what we're trying to break. You know, we're trying to break that. I mean, of course we're athletes, you know, and we have the physical part of it where we're training all the day, but you know, it's not possible if no one can really tell and express my story or our stories to everyone else and be able to have us have the best performance possible, you know. And the best performance is, you know, people who are willing to invest in uniforms, in, you know, training, mental healthiness, you know, when we get, you know, wins, losses, there's depression, there's so much stuff that goes through this for an athlete, man or woman, to be able to get through and have great performances and for people to be like, okay, yeah, we can put her pay up, you know, double of what the guys are making, you know what I mean? And so it's really, there's just so many different job opportunities to be involved in. Personally, for me, I like when I have a woman on my side, you know, I feel like they really listen and they can hear what I'm trying to say, you know, and I'm trying to be like, okay, I want to be a fighter now, but eventually I want to have, I don't know, maybe a line for kids, you know, clothing, you know, or a line for my dogs, I love my dogs, you know, and you know, it's like, whatever, you know, and I have these ladies that can help me, like, okay, how are we going to work to get this there, you know, besides just being a fighter, you know, or athlete, because eventually we have to stop competing, you know, we have to stop, so we need to be able to build. And it's so hard when we don't have people who can, you know, understand you and think, okay, we're on to the next, you know. When the guys are fighting or the guys are competing, there's just so many guys, you know what I mean, there's so many around the world in all different sports, you know. So for them, they can put all their energy into there, you know, because they don't think that the women are going to keep going forward. But it's a social movement that's exactly what's making it more and more and more, and for us to believe in each other and trust in each other and everything like that.
Denise, you touched on this a little bit earlier, all the different roles within, you know, your management and just every, I mean, you have an all-female firm. What are some skills that you look for in women that you are, you know, are surrounded by, and just how someone could get started and maybe what they could even major in college?
Well, shocker, I didn't finish college, but I own a company. So I was always the first one there and the last one to leave. I worked harder. Again, you know, being a woman wasn't easy. I had to work harder. I had to stay longer. I had to do things that I normally wouldn't do in the position I was in, you know, doing five jobs at once. Luckily today, it's not as hard as it was when I was coming up. But I really look, when I'm doing hiring at my company, I look for that tenacity. I look for hard workers. Nothing against the college kids today, but Lord Jesus, y'all. I mean, come on. You don't get $100,000 right out of college. Like, you gotta work for it, right? So it's if you are a hard worker, and I feel like I can tell who a hard worker is because I'm a hard worker. I'm still the first one in and the last one to leave in my office. I work weekends. I kind of am a little bit of what I do. They tell you don't do that, but that's me. But I feel like when I'm looking for those people, whether they're male or female, you know, they need to be hard workers. And one of the biggest things I always tell people is love what you do, because when those are their hard days, trust me, and there are hard days. I've got one of my athletes and he's, you know, it's a Sunday morning and I'm like, oh, I really wanted to go to breakfast this morning, but no, I'm not going to breakfast this morning. You know, you got to really love what you do. So if you're getting in sports because you think it's flashy and exciting, wrong industry to get into. because those people that work behind the scenes, nothing about it is flashy. Some of it's exciting, but nothing about it is flashy. It's still a job, right? People go, oh, you get to go to, I just got back from Budapest last year and I was at the Worlds because we have a track and field. You went to Budapest and you went to Barcelona. And I'm like, yeah, but I was working. Right, you know, oh, you went to the Super Bowl. I was working, I can't wait till that game is over. Right, so it's a job, you know. It's like any job you do, it just happens to be something that I really, really love. So I'm gonna put that extra effort in. And I think if it's something that you love, whether you're male or female, as long as you put that extra effort in, those employers are gonna see that. I know, I can tell you guys in a second, if someone, when they sit down to interview with me, if they're worth like, proceeding with the interview, right? Are they here for the right reasons? Is it something they really want to do? You know, there's so, like I said earlier, there's so many opportunities in sports, so many for both men and women, but for women in general, there, you guys have the world open to you now. There's, in colleges, you can go to and get a sports management degree. That wasn't even heard of when I was going to school. I was doing broadcast journalism. So the opportunities are just so big these days for everyone, and I really think it depends on what you want to do.
And I'd add to that, have something that makes you unique, you know, that separates you from the rest of the crowd. Anybody can have a blog. If you want to be a writer or a journalist, anybody can set up a blog. Have a take. Have something that makes you different. Don't just be like everybody else. Don't copy what everybody else has done. And experiment with different takes, experiment with different forms of writing. Not all of it is going to work. I mean, you can sit there and read it and you go an hour later and go, what was I thinking? You know, it may not work, but at some point you're going to find your voice, and you need to find the vision, need to find the thinking, the open thinking, the imagination that makes you different and that makes somebody like Denise say, I'm going to hire you because you have a vision for this job that nobody else does. Or if you're editing videos, if you're doing videos, if you're doing social media, have a quality about you that separates you from everybody else.
That's a great point there, just talking about what makes you unique. And that also helps in staying in the role, staying at the top of whatever you're doing. Mackenzie, in your case, you're at the top of where you can be physically, I mean, mentally, every day you're dedicated to your sport. How do you keep going and just keep your mind in the right place and just trying to stay at the top of where you are?
Yeah, it's just keep trying to put more goals, you know, never being, 100% comfortable. I think being outside your comfort zone and just having my motivation, you know, motivation to try and, you know, have a better life for me, try and, I don't know, it's like I'm training and I'm competing and I'm getting punched in the face and I'm like, you know, breaking, I'm getting my nose broken and I'm in the hospital after the fight, and it's just so much. And then you think, like, you lie down in bed and you're like, man, I don't want, when I'm stopped, all of a sudden I'm forgotten, you know, and not even necessarily me, but all this hard work is just forgotten, you know, the next big name that comes, and then, you know, the fans are like, okay, who is Mackenzie, you know? So really for me, I feel like I'm trying to do all of this hard work, you know, and I don't know, I want to be remembered, you know, I want it, not that I need remembered, but I want the hard work to make a difference, you know, and I want it to last longer than when I'm not here anymore, you know, so how can I do that? If I can be inspiration, if people can identify themselves with me, being a mom, a daughter, you know, when I was little, I was competing against the boys, you know, they didn't have girls division and boys divisions. They kind of look, okay, you guys are the same size, go ahead, let's put you to fight, you know, and then it's like, okay, and you have like your little ponytails and you're beating up the boys, you know, and they're crying and they want to be your friends, you know, and it's like, it's all part of, you know, it's growing. And nowadays they have girls division, little girl, you know, 3-4 years old and 3-4 years old boys, and they're all, you know, and it's, I feel like that's a, I don't know, I hope to think that I had a little part in that, you know, that back in my day, you know, the little girls that watched me competing and like, yeah, I want to do that, and now they can compete with a whole bunch of different girls, you know. So just keep trying to be better, you know. Even with my wins, I go back and I feel like, man, I'm so pumped, I can fight next week, you know, and put me in a fight, and then I'm all sore and I'm watching the film and I'm like, I won, but man, that's what I look like, you know. There's just so much I can correct, you know. So we're just always trying to get. We can never reach full perfection, you know, but we try. We try our best, and you see the newcomers. They're always trying to take not take you out in a bad way, you know, but they're trying to take your spot and they're trying to show that they can do better and that things evolved, and that's good. Those are our rivals, you know. I think even in you know, different jobs and stuff like that, you have those kind of people that push you to get better, you know. You see another writer or someone else and you like their style and you want to try and keep pushing forward to be better. And so I've had a lot of rivals, you know, and they're trying to beat me and I'm trying to beat them, and that really pushes us to get to be the best. And even when I become a champion, I'm thinking like, okay, I'm gonna be a champion, but that's it, you know. You know, I have the medal, I have the belt, but I want something more, you know. I want to be able to, you know, I hope one maybe share a book or share a movie and people can see kind of my whole lifestyle and see that I'm like everyone else, you know. Maybe I had my dad who was, okay, let's train, but, you know, I make mistakes. I doubt myself. I go through everything that I think everyone goes through. You know, we kind of look like a superhero up there, you know, just in the glory, you know. But no one really knows really what's going behind and how difficult it is, you know, with to have all the parts of the puzzle mix, you know, with our managers, with, you know, sometimes I'm going to fight and I'm thinking, man, my manager's doing this and, you know, no one's really listening to me, you know, what I want, you know. So once you get that combination of everything flowing, you know, then you start seeing the things work out and you keep going forward. When you see the things working, you want to keep doing it, you know, because everything's working and flowing. So
I think what Mackenzie's talking about is also creating opportunity. And that's one thing I think I would love everybody to leave here today, is making sure you're creating opportunity for everyone, especially women in this space. I represent Kristen Press. You may or may not know her. She is a two-time champion, World Cup champion. She's also one of the very quiet three that fought for women's equal pay and sports. And there was a landmark decision a couple years ago, and now the women's national team gets paid just as much as the men's national team. And exactly. If she was here, she'd be happy I was talking about it. And what's really poignant about that is that some people are like, well, they don't get paid because they don't make that type of money. The sponsors don't come in. You're right, they don't, because sponsors weren't coming in, right? But now, as this panel has told you, now more sponsors are coming in. Go to the games, support the women, whether they're a player or they're a front office person. You have to support the sport so it can be just like the men's sports, right? So they can have equal pay. So not just the players on the team, but the women in the front office, right? So it's all about supporting and creating opportunity so everyone can leave getting paid the same, feeling equal, because I think it's all about equality.
Annie, for you being with the PWHL and having, you know, that standard set on that end, how did that affect building the league for professional women's hockey as well?
Just having the
from the aspect of just equal pay and just different sides of it that you have to, you know, listen to the athletes a little bit differently.
Yeah, I mean, very important. And I think what was unique about our league, again, is that the CBA, the collective bargaining agreement, was in line before the league had launched. So unlike the NWSL or the WNBA, they had to build the bargaining agreement kind of after the fact. And I think there was a lot that went into the players building and asking for and demanding what they wanted as far as pay and safety and travel and all of it before the league had even taken off. So a lot of that, for us, they had already done so much of the hard work. So for us coming in on the league side, there are standards we had to meet. So not only equal pay, but you know, there was a lot of players on our team that have young children. So Kendall Coyne, who was just coming off maternity leave, but still wanted to play, and I remember her saying, like, people are thinking I'm not going to play in the league anymore because I'm pregnant. Yeah, you get that all the time, right? So she's like, no, I'm going to have my baby and then I'm going to go train. You know, her husband plays in the NFL. He's like, no one asks him if he's still going to play in the NFL. Like, he's still playing. So, you know, there were things built around the notion of making sure that everything was the same, right? So the players with children can bring their nanny on trips that we pay for. They get a seat on the plane so they can bring their children with them. them if they choose to. You know, in Kendall's case, she needed to. She had a young child and she was traveling, so she needed to bring her son with her on trips. So just allowing for that, giving these players a housing stipend, allowing them to stay in, you know, hotels that are of certain quality. Traveling was a big thing. So we're not going to bus them if the trip is over, you know, a certain amount of hours. They're going to take a flight, not bus. So there were just standards that were already in place and in play that that we had to abide by before the team had even launched. Having a salary cap for these women, so a certain amount of players could only make X amount of dollars. There was a cap and a ceiling and a floor, so we couldn't pay players a minimum amount, you know, less than the floor and more than the ceiling. And the GMs had to be really creative on how to shape their rosters to make sure that the pay was meeting the salary cap, not going over, and that they had certain amount of players at certain salaries. So a lot went into that, and I think that all plays into, again, player first movement and making sure that the players knew that that stepping on the ice in January 1, that they had built all of this. So going on into the ice in January 1, they didn't have to fight for a lot of it. It was already there.
Helene, you saw a lot of this through your time, you know, as a sports writer, sports columnist as well. When you think back on all the amazing events that you've covered, Super Bowls, Olympics, all of these different events, what stands out in your mind from your long career, 47 years?
I think one of the things was the U.S. women's soccer team, 1999, filling up the Rose Bowl. Yeah. That was just an astonishing sight. And I think that started a cultural shift. It was the idea that parents could take their kids to a place where the girls could see other women on the field. They could dream big. It was a safe place. It was a fun place. You see something like that, and that's not just a game. That's a game changer. I think it's a cultural changer too. And we're seeing that now with the WNBA, again with the WNBA, the PWHL, with all these leagues, the incredible TV ratings that the women's NCAA basketball gets, the still incredible popularity of the women's national soccer team. I mean, I covered the send-off game in San Jose before they left for the World Cup last summer, and I remember I was walking down a hallway and I saw a sign on a door and it said, "Nanny's Room." And I don't think I'd ever seen that before. I'm certainly not going to see one at Honda Center, but for a Ducks game. But you know, the shift in thinking is the important thing. It's like, for example, people who are in power at TV networks or newspapers or magazines, what's left of magazines, you know, they got to where they are by covering A, B, C, and D. It's safe. They knew how to cover that. They grew up with it. Most of them grew up with men's sports. Very few grew up with women's sports. But now there's readers and viewers and listeners are saying, we want to see FGHIJ. We want to see more women's sports. And it's difficult sometimes to get that coverage. I think the LA Times has done a better job of that the last few years. But now they're down to one woman writer on the staff, which is not enough. But you know, just think of it as you're changing culture. But whatever you do in sports, if it's a fan, if it's an executive, an agent, whatever you end up doing, a data analyst for a hockey team or a baseball team or whatever, you're moving the needle. Never forget, you're moving the needle.
I love that. Yeah, that's wonderful. And you have such a good point there. Just, again, all the different things that women can do in the industry now. For anyone that wants to hear, what do they need to do? What's the best piece of advice that you've been given? Denise, why don't we start with you?
I always tell people internships, if you actually want to work in sports, one of the best tools that you can, that's out there really is doing internships. We have an internship program at our company, but most agencies, most clubs, most leagues have internships. And if you're not too sure what you want to do, I've had interns that like, I might want to do PR, marketing, and management, and this and that. And then they get to us and they're like, oh no, don't want to do that. So, and then they're like, well, maybe you want to go to a team, or you want to go to another agency, or you want to be a journalist, or, I mean, there's just so many opportunities. But I always say one of the best things you can do is go do some internships. Now, unfortunately, internships at most agencies, at least ours, is you have to be a college student and you get credit for it, or there's paid internships like CAA and ICM if you want to go to some of the bigger agencies. So if you're past the internship age, I think that's also calling maybe some of these companies and seeing maybe what's an entry-level position that you can try. Because I have a gal who's our vice president now, and she started out as my assistant answering phone calls. Now she's my VP. Obviously, that took a few years, right? But she didn't know what she wanted to do when she got there, so she answered phones for me, and now she's running my company. So, you know, there's so many different opportunities depending, but sometimes you might not know what that is. You know, you might think you want to do A, but Z looks way more attractive, or maybe Z is more in your skill set. So I say internships and also following up with maybe some people that work in the industry as well.
I mean, internships are key. That's how I got my job with the LA Kings, is just kind of doing whatever. But also just, I'm a people person, so building relationships to me is very key. You never know who you're going to run into, and later in life or later in your career, how that person's going to impact you. So keeping good relationships, staying in touch. I said this yesterday, but staying in touch not only when you need something, but just sending them an article or saying hello, seeing how people are doing. Just building those. I mean, good example, I'm going to mention Brett again. Brett and I played hockey together back in like 98, and here he is calling me asking me if I want to come out for this women in sports event. So, you know, you never know what's going to come back around full circle for you. So relationships to me are very important. Picking up the phone and calling people and chatting with them and just seeing how they're doing. Writing thank you notes to me is I preach to my daughter all the time to write thank you notes and staying in touch. So that to me, I'm very big on relationships and staying accountable and, you know, staying true to who you are and knowing who you are inside and just, you know, kind of like, you know, meeting new people. I'm excited to meet everybody here today. So
I have one more thing to add. Going to things like this, huge, and going to women's events and sports, they are becoming more and more prevalent. I was at, I talk about the NFL, but I was at Super Bowl and there was a huge women in sports event. There was 500 women in the room. So, like, you have an opportunity to go get a ticket and go to that, go, right? Coming here, big step, right? You're going to something. But more and more now, women's events, women in sports events, they're more prevalent. They've gained so much popularity. So when you have an opportunity, go to them.
Helene, how have you seen these types of events grow too?
Absolutely. I think it's Denise made a very good point. You meet other people. You meet somebody who shares your vision. Maybe you end up collaborating with them on a website, on a video, on a business plan for some kind of industry. I mean, there's just so many people out there that you may not know of who share the passion, who share the idea that, wait a minute, am I going to be an outsider or will I be accepted? I'm a woman. I like sports. You know, you see other women who like sports. There's kind of strength in numbers, too.
Mackenzie, I also want to wish you a happy birthday. I would be remiss to not wish you a happy birthday.
Happy
we appreciate
birthday.
You taking the time to be here with us today. Also want to bring up the fact that you just fought at Honda Center just last month, and you're a hometown girl, Huntington Beach. Getting that opportunity to be a representative of Orange County in your hometown, what was that experience like for you?
Yeah, it was amazing. It was kind of going off of what these ladies are saying. It was just to be, I took a short notice fight. It was about 4 weeks here at Honda Center, so I couldn't say no. I was like, yes, definitely. There was former champions. There was a title belt on the line. And me and my opponent, we got fight of the night. So for the woman to get the fight of the night, of course, I mean, we gave it all out there. You know, we bloodied up and everything. But for us to get fight of the night with so many amazing guys fighting, you know, it was amazing. And to walk out and they're saying, oh, Mackenzie representing Huntington Beach. And then just the crowd went crazy. I was like, man, like for a woman, you know, this is, all these people are cheering for me at the Honda Center, like full, you know, it was amazing. It definitely gave me the motivation to lay everything out there, you know, winning or losing. I felt the support, you know, I felt that, you know, I have people behind me no matter what happens. And I just felt like, man, we're reaching different levels here, you know, that, you know, there's belts on the line and everything, and the woman's got the fight of the night. So it was amazing.
That's awesome. We were super excited for that last month. Obviously excited to have you here as well, and the rest of you too. I want to open up to any questions that we may have out on the floor for any of these wonderful women.
Well, don't all jump at once. Someone's got to have a question somewhere.
Coming to you. Okay. We got the mic coming for you.
Hello, my name is Shane. I have a question for Ms. White. So when you went into sports, obviously very male dominated, did you know right off the bat when you got that opportunity, I need to be a boss, I need to be hard-nosed, or was there an event that kind of made you do that, or did you kind of just know right at the gate, you know, this is how I gotta kind of approach it?
When I first got into sports, I was so discounted it wasn't funny. Was she there to date the players? Was she there just for fun? What was she doing, right? So I don't know if there was a specific moment or event that actually happened, but more of kind of the knowledge of like, I was made to feel like I wasn't supposed to be there because there wasn't any women doing what I was doing, or at least at the level I was doing it with the athletes that I was doing it with. So I feel like I kind of, again, as I said earlier, I felt like I needed to work harder, be smarter, stay stronger, you know, all those things to be able to be in the room. Because at that time, you were lucky if you got a seat at the table, let alone, you know, even think that there was more than one seat at the table for a woman. So, and again, I don't know if there was a specific moment, but I do know that, and this is, mind you, 25 years ago, the knowledge of a woman being in the room just wasn't very prevalent.
Hi, my name is Mary, and I'm here with my nieces, Tatiana and Haley, 16 and 17. What would you tell your 16, 17-year-old selves? I know it was a few years ago, but.
Hi, ladies. continue to work hard, have fun. Same thing I tell my 12-year-old. I tell her three things before she goes on the soccer field, is to have fun, respect everybody, and work hard, because I didn't drive you all this way and sit in the rain and pay this much money to have you just play, you know, 50%. So give it your all, give your effort. But first of all, just find your own path. Find something that you want to do, that you're excited to do, right? And that like gets you to wake up every morning and say, yes, I really want to do this. And you may not know your path now, but you know, keep working hard, keep trying new things until you find what you want to do.
Coming for you. Hi, thank you for being here. Each of you I find fascinating, so it's fun to listen. I can sense your work ethic. It's palpable. Like, I can just feel it coming off the stage. And I can sense some stubbornness to succeed in each and every one of you, including our moderator. But how do you share that with your up-and-coming employees or people that you run into? Because I was a high school teacher for 30 years, and I know what is coming. And the work ethic doesn't seem to be as strong as it was, and like you said, they want to start at the top, $100,000, here we go. So how do you share some of what you have and know, and maybe you're born with it, or how'd you get it, with women coming up?
I'll take this question. I feel like you're right. You know, the work ethic is a little, nothing against this younger generation, but the work ethic's a little bit differently. And I don't know if that's because we've laid the groundwork already for them and they feel there's an easier path, right? Because someone coming up in the business now looks at me or any of these women on this panel and is like, oh, I can watch them, I've got this. Rather than when we all grew up, we're like, well, there wasn't anybody to watch, so there was no easy path. So I believe sometimes you're born with it. I came from really meager beginnings. I was a foster kid. I had a mentally ill mother. My grandmother raised me. We were super poor. So at a very young age, what was instilled in me was kind of a little fighter mentality. Like, I'm not gonna give up. I'm not gonna let anybody tell me no, right? And again, it was good and bad, right? Sometimes you just need to listen to no. But for me, I felt like that was instilled in me. I don't know if you can learn that. I don't know if you can learn that at all. And I don't know if you can teach it either. I think you can put role models in front of them and say, look at these women did it this way and this is how hard they worked. I don't think anybody gets a free pass unless you come from an affluent family, and even then, it's not always free. So I think you reap what you sow. If you are willing to work hard, you can attain those goals. But if you're not willing to work hard, it might be harder to come by. And I hope that the younger generation, and you, I assume you're a teacher, can learn that. And maybe it's putting those type of role models in front of them in the classroom too to learn that. I don't know if I have that answer.
I'd like to add to that. I'm sorry. When I was at the Times, and I would occasionally get emails or letters or phone calls from students saying, well, I want to go into journalism, should I? And one of the things I would do is say no. Because I wanted to see their reaction. If they immediately accepted it as, they said, no, it's going to be very hard, you're going to have to prove yourself, you're going to work late hours, your life is going to get disrupted, you may have dinner plans, and then, the team you cover makes a trade, so much for that dinner. But I would tell them no, and then I would see their reaction. If they accepted it as being too hard, I figured they didn't have the grit to make it. They didn't have the determination to make it. But the ones who said, okay, why not? Why can't I? What do I have to do to make it? Those are the people who I always thought had a chance.
I think a lot of no's turn into a yes, too. And I have to say, I have two little babies sitting next to me, and they're look at them up here. I mean, come on. So, Alexis and I talked the other day on Friday when we met, and you told me a story about how that you created your own job at your last job. You walked in there and said they didn't have this job, so I went up to the manager and said, I want this job. Here it is. You wrote your own job description, basically. So kudos to you guys as well.
Thank you. Thank you. That's very kind. Yeah, I guess I'll just touch on that. It is a lot of determination. It's going to be a lot of no's. But those no's will eventually, you'll get one yes, and that's what you lean into. You believe in yourself, you believe in your skills, have that really amazing support system around you, and someday it all works out. And I feel like that's how it works, so.
I think the common thing is no one up here took no for an answer. And I think that's really what the commonality is.
Absolutely.
There were definitely hard moments, right? I think even when we had, there's always going to be ups and downs, Even at our best moments, we're going to be like, yes, I won. And then the next weekend we lose, And you're like, what, And I feel like we're always going to have ups and downs, and it's never going to be perfect, the whole year. But it's just consistency and staying at it, and taking the good with the bad and getting better and trying to correct and make mistakes. And yes, yeah.
Any other questions over here?
Been waving her hand for a really long time.
Hello. Hi, I'm Janet. Hi, down here. And currently I'm actually a court interpreter, which is actually a very female-dominated profession. However, I would love to transition and being an interpreter for sports specifically. And don't worry, everyone, I do not have a gambling problem, so that won't be an issue. But I just want to piggyback off something that Denise said, which I feel might be affecting me probably getting these opportunities, because I feel I have been professionally trained to be an interpreter, and I'm leaning more towards baseball. I watch baseball in Spanish, so I know the term, so I do feel like I would be prepared. But like you said, Denise, are they looking at you? Do you want to date the players? How does one overcome something like that? So they see you as a professional, because what Aline said a little bit ago, that there were no males in the locker room. I look at every single MLB roster. There's no female interpreters. How does one get over that hurdle?
Well, actually, there is a female interpreter who works for the Angels. She worked with Show Grace. She worked a lot with Shohei Ohtani when he was with the Angels. But I do understand your point, yeah.
He needs a new interpreter.
there's a job opening, yeah.
Sorry, I just had to get that in there. The lady in red has been holding her hand up for a really long time.
There.
Can we grab her? Sorry.
Hi, I'm Althea, and I'm really glad, Alexis, you did tell your story, because I heard it from Dan, right? He told me what your story was, and I really wanted to hear how you made your job. So as we are going on as becoming women established in a male environment, are you feeling less and less that you have to fight for your sense of place, of being there? This is especially true for as The Women's Hockey League, or leagues, if we ever get to that point, starts to expand across the U.S. and Canada. You know, we have an arena in Long Beach. I'd really like to see a women's team.
How many does it see? Because we've been breaking some records.
Yes, and it's been amazing to see how it has swept over Canada and Boston and New York City, my New York City jersey. So I really would like to know how it's going to be to get people to build teams, to be GMs, to get the whole gear up for other areas in the United States who currently do not. We're lucky here, we do have women's sports, but we do not have a lot of women hockey teams at this point in high school. But we do have women, a lot of women, playing hockey in this area. I've got two physical therapists and a hairdresser that play hockey in this area. So I really was, I mean, it just really got me that, okay, where's the money to put together a team?
Right. Well, the Samueli family is amazing. The Anaheim Ducks girls programs here are amazing. More and more girls are playing hockey in the Anaheim area. When I was out in LA, we started the Lady Kings program. So you're seeing more and more girls play hockey, not only in California, but all over the country. And I think when the women won the gold in 1998, and you could see them on TV, that helped more girls want to play hockey, right? Again, you go back to Billie Jean King, if you can see it, you can be it. And I think a lot of the issues were you only saw the women playing every 4 years, and now with the new league, you're seeing them play every night, every day. January 1st, we dropped the puck. We went to Ottawa the next day, and we're record broken, 8,000 fans in the building. You know, a week after that, we had 13,000 fans in Minnesota. We just played a game in Scotiabank where the Maple Leafs play and had, I think, 18,000 fans. We just sold out Bell Center, which is where the Canadians play, with 21,000 fans. So, yes, we want to keep growing. I'm going to talk to Brett after this to see if we can have a game in Anaheim, but we'd want to be at the Honda Center. We want to be at the Honda Center, though, because that's our capacity now. We do also have to remember our league is only 4 months old, so we are still in the infancy of it. So continuing to grow, yes, and we thank and appreciate the pioneers that came before us and the leagues, the CWHL and the NWHL and the PHF and all these leagues that came before us to allow us to have the stage that we sit on today.
Well, if I could, I just wanted to get back to the question that you asked before about how do you get accepted. By acting professional, by being prepared, being ready for anything that could happen, anticipating problems, anticipating good things, by just being upstanding, just be the person, act like the person you want to be.
And don't take no for an answer, girl. You got to keep going, right? You just have to keep going. I tell some of my employees in my office, like, I can't get so-and-so anything. And I'm like, well, how many people did you talk to? And did you go to the top? Did you, you know? So until you finally get that final no, and even then, you just have to, it's how bad do you want it? You know, you're going to get 1,000 no's for every one yes, like they said earlier. So it's, you know, females are few and far between as interpreters, right? So find out kind of what she said. What makes you special? Why should you have the job, right? And exploit that. You know, I think I would be the best interpreter in this league because, right? So I think you have a great shot at it. Just keep going.
Yeah, and I'm just going to add a little bit of how she had said networking, you know, and, you know, meeting people. At least for me, I'm on the other side of it. So, I mean, I've had interpreters that help me. And it's definitely very comforting when, you know, they come and talk to me like, oh, do you need anything, you know? And, you know, they make me feel comfortable. And I feel like, okay, I can count on you, you know? Like, sometimes I finish a fight and they ask me questions and I don't even know really what I'm saying, you know? I just fought, you know? So I'm kind of like, I'm so happy, yeah. And, the interpreters kind of like, they kind of help. You know, they understand what I'm trying to say, and they can explain it for me even better, you know, especially crucial moments, you know, moments that post-fight interview, for example, in front of tons of people, it's going to be on YouTube, and, you know, other articles are going to take that interview and take parts of what you say and twist it and make it, you know, so something like that, interpreter is really going to help. You know, it's going to connect to me. You know, I'm going to remember that. And the next time I'm going to look for you, I'm like, oh, is she going to be there? Because it helps me, you know. So I think just kind of that networking and being comfortable with the people you work with that will help you, them to see you. as a professional way and take you seriously and want you next to them and ask for you, you know? At least I ask for certain interpreters when I need them, you know? I'm like, are they going to be there? Because I felt really good with them, you know?
We have time for one more question right here in the front.
Hey, my name is Lacey. I just want to say thank you, first of all. This is amazing. I talked with Annie yesterday and just told her that yesterday I was super emotional and almost cried like 10 times. So thank you guys for this. Yet we still see that there's disproportionate representation with women of color, Black and Indigenous specifically, queer women, neurodivergent, disabled, specifically in sports, fat women. Those of us with privilege, how, when we're blazing the trail, do we bring those women up with us?
Both being a mentor. I mean, there were a lot of times when I was at the LA Times, I would get letters from, or emails or phone calls from students, and I would try and mentor them, or other women I met on the job. Those of us who are established or have worked so hard to be established, it's our responsibility to pull up those who can and those who want to do what we're doing.
I think your actions speak louder than words. I've had my company for 25 years and I've hired nothing but women for 25 years. So I have a company that's all female based, right? So it's your actions. Someone says, well, how do you promote women in sports? And he's like, I hire them. Right? So, like, you know, how do the Ducks promote women in sports? They hire them. So it's about, you know, being a woman of action and like she said, bringing people up behind you. So, and be thankful for those people. And then it's your duty to then lead the way for the ones behind you.
Yeah, and representation definitely matters, and showing them off the ice and on the ice, off the field, you know, and what they look like and how they dress and how they present themselves, I think is just so important, amplifying their platform and their stage.
Well, thank you all for your questions, and can we get a round of applause for our amazing panel? Annie, Mackenzie, Helene, Denise, thank you so much for joining us. We're really honored to have you here as a part of our Women in Sports Weekend with the Anaheim Ducks. Amazing to hear everything that you've put into your individual roles in this industry, working to make it a better and more exciting place for women in the future. And we really appreciate you being here.
Same to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dream big.